In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And, well, today we're talking about interesting developments in the, at least for me, this is kind of one that you don't have a horse in this race completely, but you get to hear about the craziness, I guess, of the ideas. I know I'm being very vague at this moment in time.
Okay,
What we're talking about this week, today, is schooling for children. Specifically,
such a positive subject.
Well, here's so interesting. This is exactly what we want to talk about. Although for people of our generation, for the Xennials out there, a large number of them do have kids in school still. Some of them have kids already out of school and are probably grateful. The ones that you know, got knocked up while they were still in high school and crap, their kids are already out of school, so they're happy with that.
But I could understand that a lot of them are dealing with this situation at the moment.
We were one of those generations that we actually had a pretty high number of our generation decide to have kids later in life. They decided to attempt to get themselves established with, you know, schooling done, job mm-hmm. done, crippling debt, and then have the kids.
Right.
As opposed to have the kids and have all those things happen later. So we do have a large number in our generation group that still have school-age children, elementary even into junior high and high school.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all the parents of children have been dealing with for the last, 6 months, 7 months, however long it's been, six, right? March is when everybody stopped going to school. So we're looking at 6 months now of at home instruction because the schools have been closed due to the pandemic.
Right. So all of that time was spent trying to prep your kids for the next season of school as well. Right.
Well, yeah, especially March, April, and June were really just the schools were scrambling at that point to try to figure out what they could do. Mm-hmm. Many of the schools did have some distance learning programs in place for students that did distance learning, which there are very few number of students that did distance learning before all of this happened. They did have at least some kind of programs in place, so they had a little bit of an idea. But making sure that kids have all the technology that they need to be able to connect to the school to do their schooling, big deal. Making sure that the teachers were able to change up their lesson plans and work through the technology that the kids know how to work better than the teachers do,
right.
Also a big deal. And then the shift of having kids at home and not at school in an economy where it often requires, as we've discussed a couple of different times before, both parents to be working. And so the kids being at school is usually a helpful thing for the parents to be able to work during that time period. They don't have to worry about childcare while the kids are at school. There's enough after school programs that many of the parents
right.
just don't have to worry about childcare in general because they're able to get their kids involved in many of these things, and those things all out the window. So the kids are home.
Yeah.
They have to find ways to be motivated. The parents have to be much more involved with the motivation of the kids because there's nobody else there to motivate the kids. This has been a
right.
whole shift that many families have gone through and many families have been have had nothing but trouble with. And then luckily at the start of the school year, you know, August, September, whenever your specific school started, the teachers had a little bit better understanding because they'd seen basically what worked in the spring and what did not.
Okay.
And they also became a little more strict with the fact of like, with the certain schools where they were fumbling and trying to figure out what to do. High schools, from what I understand, were a lot easier than, say, your elementary or your middle school. Middle school may be somewhat easy, but yeah, elementary school, very, very difficult to try to do the online education because so much of it is hands-on, so much of it is direct contact with the students, whereas the high school, it's, you know, sit and watch a lecture, do homework. That's pretty much what you do
right,
in the school.
Right.
You can do that fairly easy online in comparison. But there's when the stuff rolled out for the fall semester, you know, the start of school,
mm-hmm.
there's at least in dealing with my kids in school, there's a lot more rules, a lot more strictures. They had to come up with a lot of these rules. You know, you had to be dressed appropriately for your class meetings. You couldn't be showing up in pajamas and whatnot. You had to be doing your meetings in certain rooms of the house. No more doing your meetings from your bedroom. You got to be in, you know, living room or kitchen or something like that in your house.
Wow.
So that you can be, you know, there's to try to make it as much as close to the kind of restrictions that you'd have in the school environment, mm-hmm. on your home environment as well. The fact that you had to make sure to be there every single day for attendance, because of course the people in charge of funding the schools aren't going to fund the schools if they can't have some kind of record that the kids are there doing something every single day.
Whoa.
So okay. Requirements got a little bit heftier, which are I'm not saying those are bad things. That does make things have to be held accountable, but you're still dealing with parents trying to juggle a life where both, like I say, often need to work to be able to afford to live in this country. And you know, make sure the family has what they need, and try to juggle this idea of somebody's got to be on top of the kid at home
right.
to make sure that the kid is doing their stuff. And so there's been a pushback from the very beginning. You know, when can we get our kids back to school? When can we get our kids back to school? When can we get our kids back to school? Which has been a troubling thing for me, I will say.
Like you personally, or are you talking on a more...
Well, I'm not saying... No. Personally, I'm troubled by the right. idea that all these people want to get their kids back to school as soon as possible.
Right.
Because now let me preface with the fact that I am the person who hates summer vacation. Absolutely hate summer vacation. Now, the reason isn't because I hate having my kids at home, because I love my kids. I hate the fact that it is a complete disruption of what is the normal schedule. It messes up the kids, because by the time they're off for, you know, month and a half, 2 months, whatever it ends up being, they spend the first month of school relearning basically everything they learned the last year, because they've lost so much because they've been out of school for so damn long.
Right.
Plus, it's not really a good training to – it's not really a good – training is not the right word. Preparation. It's not really good preparation for the adult world, because unless you get a job as a teacher – which, admittedly, more and more of our generation are getting the job as a teacher, because once you go to school, once you go to the college that you were told you had to go to, because that was the only way you'd ever be successful in life, and you get your master's degree or even your bachelor's degree, it's the same as like everybody else that got it, and there's 100 jobs to fill and like 2,000 people applying, you go, well, crap, I have this degree. I have this crippling debt now for student loans. I guess I'm going to have to get my teaching credential and go teach, even though I never wanted to do that. So, I mean, we're seeing many, many people become teachers that they do get that summer off to an extent. But in most of the jobs in the real world, especially the jobs that the kids are going to get when they first get out of high school, none of those jobs are going to give them the summer off. In fact, summer is their peak busy season typically. And so this idea that you have this summer vacation for school, it's an old, antiquated idea that doesn't fit in our modern world and doesn't make sense anymore. There was a time when it did make sense. This is not that time. We should not be having this huge, gigantic break. Maybe smaller breaks throughout the year, multiple times. Like, I don't know if you remember if they ever tried to implement the track system in any schools when you were younger.
I'm not like entirely multiple. Familiar with that terminology. What do you mean?
Okay, this was a year-round schooling type. Did they ever try year-round schooling with you?
No, they didn't. I remembered being a kid and like dreading the concept of year-round school, but I never actually had it implemented to me at all. I never went to summer school. There was never a year-round school year that ever happened. I remember people talking about possibly implementing it in like middle school or high school, but it never happened. Yeah.
The way that year-round schooling would work is you'd be on different tracks. Different students would be on different tracks. Sometimes they label them with letters, numbers, color coding, whatever. And so students on one track would be in school for like 2.5 months, and you'd have 2 weeks off. And then you go another 2.5 months and get 2 weeks off. And then they'd stagger it, kind of like when you're doing like rounds of row, row, row your boat.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
So they'd stagger different groups to where not all groups had the 2 weeks off together, or maybe it was 3 weeks, depending on how they you know, made it work out.
Right.
So they would have one group would be off at a time for 2 weeks. Let's say there was like four groups in the school. One
gotcha.
Group would be off for 2 weeks at a time, and then like, you know, a little later, another group would be off for 2 weeks at a time. And they never really lined up to have the same times off. And they were trying. They tried to be good about making sure that families were all on the same grouping so that all families got the times off together. So if you got like, if you're one of those families that's got like, you know, multiple siblings at different levels of school, they'd try to get you on the same tracks.
Right.
So
that would make sense.
When oldest sibling had 2 weeks off, you know, the younger two siblings also had those 2 weeks off. So the family could go do something together.
Right.
For 2 weeks at a time. But this split up the time to where you only had 2 to 3 weeks off total at each break interval.
Okay.
And instead of this, you know, month and a half, 2 month long break thing.
Right.
And it would just shift through much more, still way more break than you get for any job that you will ever have in the United States.
Right.
And if you want to get that much vacation time, you need to move to, and become a naturalized citizen of France or just about any Scandinavian country.
Right.
Where they actually encourage and almost make you take a vacation days. And they have, you get like, in France, you get something like 2.5 months of vacation a year, and they make you take that because they firmly believe that happy workers are workers that get to take time away for themselves.
Right.
And to make sure they get the time away, they, and this is, by the way, this is paid vacation that you get every year, not just you have the days off and you don't get paid for them. This is paid vacation as part of your job that you get every year, because they believe a happy workforce is a good workforce. Now, keep in mind, this is a country that the workforce decided at one point they were tired of the people up top telling them what to do and went around and chopped off all their heads. So the people in charge, they know what happens when you piss off the lower class, because they've had it happen to them.
Right.
So
exactly.
They know they're
let's
like,
try
you
to
know
stop
what?
That from happening now.
You guys need time away from your job with pay to be able to not chop our heads off. We're going to give that shit to you because you know what? That works better for us. So, I mean,
have all the cake. Know, just have all the cake. Okay. Take the cake.
And eat it too.
Yeah.
And see, that's the thing is,
cake, whatever you want.
She never actually said that. But,
no.
Anyway, point being. Point
right, but being, that's a lesson learned still, right?
Yeah, the lesson still can be gleaned as if you keep the common people happy by giving them things that increase the happiness of their life,
right?
Everybody can be a little bit happier, and you don't get your head chopped off.
Right, exactly.
I'm just saying, there are people maybe in this country that could learn that lesson without the head chopping off. I'm just saying, let's do good for the common people, and we don't have to worry about what bad things might happen to the rich people that are taking advantage of the common people. Different story for a different day.
Right.
Anyway, the track system I liked, the year-round school system I liked, I only got to be like a month in it because it was implemented in the East Bay where I was living at the time, and literally it was literally the first and only time I ever had my birthday at school.
Oh.
Because my birthday is in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I would never have my birthday at school and watch all my friends have birthdays and birthday parties all throughout the year, but me, nope, never had it. So that was the one year I had it, and about a week after my birthday we found out that my grandmother had passed away.
Oh,
and
man.
my father was and so this is the first time, and nothing really happened on that birthday, by the way, except I got like a cupcake from the school and an announcement over the loudspeaker that it was my birthday that day. So, but even then I was like, that was in like ninth grade. So I was like, well, crap, I finally got somebody to say my birthday and people acknowledge it. And
oh.
Then, like I say, a week, 10 days later, I find out that my grandmother had passed away. My father was an only child. So he inherited her house and property, and we moved away from the East Bay up to the North Valley where we are now. And so I was only in that class for like, or in that school with that track setup for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Oh man.
So it was like, damn it. Finally
got somewhere.
Damn it.
Yeah. Somebody that recognizes.
Yes. So,
and
I mean, it's funny that it had that confluence right at that moment for me. But the idea was really intriguing to me because you have that summer break where parents have to, just like they've had to for the last 6 months, figure out what to do about their kids that are home when normally they're gone from this, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning till 3 or 4 or even 5 sometimes in the afternoon block. That's a nice block where, I mean, I remember we had the discussion about your mother going back to work, your mother or stepmother, I forget which one it was for sure, going back to work and slowly building up, going back to work more and more hours and time while you were in school, as you got progressively older.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the model of what happened for our childhoods, was watching those mothers slowly go back to school once the kids were, because we grew up in that economy. Previous to that, it wasn't completely necessary. Previous to the 1980s, wasn't completely necessary for both parents to be working.
No.
One parent in just a standard normal job could oftentimes make enough to pay the bills for the family, and you know, you'd be okay. You wouldn't be rich, you wouldn't be doing super great, but you'd be okay. You wouldn't be struggling, you wouldn't be, you know, having to be on county aid and food stamps and all of those things.
Right.
One person could do enough of a job that the other parent could stay home and actually, you know, take care of kids and be a part of those things. But we definitely were the first generation to see that full shift of the mom had to go back to work, especially because that was still the time that the dad was the breadwinner of the family and had to be the breadwinner of the family. Mm-hmm. The mom was staying home with the kids. The mom, she had to go back to work so that the family could make enough money to survive, because you weren't making enough money until then. Yep. And that's the thing, is what do those families do over summer vacation? Who do they get to watch the kids? Well, sometimes they get the grandparents, who are hopefully retired, which doesn't happen anymore, by the way. The grandparents can't retire until they're like in their 70s, because they're still dealing with all the massive debt that is sitting around for them. So they don't have the time sometimes to even help watch the kids. But if you don't have those people around, what do you do with your kids during that time? You pay out the ask for some kind of child care while you're at work during the summer? Part of the reason why this system has always seemed so ridiculous to me. It's a lot easier if you have this year-round schooling. If you have a two-week time period off where the kids are off, you may have vacation that you can take, especially if, you know, we finally got employment set up where we gave adequate vacation days to people like France. But even if not, you could take some vacation days off. You could take some sick days off. But to have somebody watch your kids for 2 weeks is a hell of a lot easier than to have somebody watch your kid for like 7 weeks. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Little 2 week intervals, that's so much easier to do than 7 to 8 weeks in a solid block together. Especially when they get to teenagers, because the food cost alone, dear God, teenagers eat freaking everything. I speak from experience. Well, it's not that they eat everything. They just eat massive quantities of whatever it is that they like.
Fully understood.
I mean, I've seen, I don't know if you shop at like the big membership stores like the Costco's and the Sam's Club, but I have brought home one of those boxes that have like the individual bags of like Cheez-Its in it, 45 bags of the individual Cheez-It bags. I have seen that gone in 2 days.
Days?
Two days.
Days. You said the two D days. Word days. That's nuts. Okay. That in itself
What's
is nuts.
Nuts about that? What's nuts about what? That is one child over 2 days.
Uh-uh. No way, dude.
One child.
No way. No way.
And not to give too much away, but like you kind of know my three kids. You know the two boys, you know the girl, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of the boys is a little on the huskier side. The other one's a little on the skinny side.
Right.
It was the skinny one.
Shut up. Okay, that's the surprise.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
And you couldn't even tell. He didn't have like a pooch out belly or nothing. Just straight down.
Downed it straight out, huh?
That's what teenagers do.
Was that literally the only thing he ate over that entire time?
Basically,
over that 2 days?
Yes.
It was like he wouldn't have any room for anything else. Wouldn't have room for water at that point.
It was like chicken nuggets, no. Cereal, no.
But yeah, dude,
give me them Cheez-Its. So when I bought another box this week, and I'm like, three bags at a time. You get three bags a day. That's all you get.
Oh.
And I get the look of like, where's the box? Well, you ain't getting the box. You get three bags a day. Just no.
Nope.
I'll toss at least one bag your sister's way each day, because she barely got the chance to grab any.
Yeah, man.
He was just like, nope, that's mine, Hork.
Hork.
But anyway. Anyway, this, and the thing is, like I said, this time period, feeding these kids, taking care of these kids, watching these kids, summer vacation is so antiquated, such a huge amount of time. But it's what we got to do because nobody likes to change the traditional things because it's tradition and we should stay that way. So, sorry, that's my traditional voice.
I kind of put that together.
So, you know, we've had 6 months of this now. We've had 6 months of, and part of that is because the tradition of having the summer vacation. So you get the time that we were closed down in spring for school. You get the time that we're closed down so far in fall. And then you get that big giant summer vacation where it's like, you woke up and it's like, okay, I guess the best thing right now is that I don't have to turn on computers all day for the kids and monitor them. So yay, probably my favorite summer vacation that I have had since, I don't even remember because I hated it even as a kid. So probably the best summer vacation I've ever had.
Okay. Is,
and I basically went from being a kid and being in college to having kids. So I, you know, I never had that moment of not being in some type of school before I had kids and then kind of right back into the thing of school. So I maybe had 3 or 4 years there before my oldest kid started school where I didn't have to, I wasn't concerned about whether it was fall, winter, spring, or summer, except to like, okay, it's cold outside. Let's throw a jacket on the kid.
Right.
That's about, you know, that's about the only concern I had about them because I wasn't thinking about summer vacations and summer, you know, summer job stuff. But, yeah, it was probably the best one I've spent in years because, and again, maybe ever, because the thing was, I didn't have to make sure to be up and have kids on computers at 9 o'clock in the morning. I could actually sleep in a little bit, which really wasn't much, but it was something, you know, something a little better. Just like the fact that, I mean, I didn't mind, I don't mind getting them ready for school because then they go off to school and I can come home and sleep if I want to. And it's a better sleep. That's the best sleep. The kids at school sleep is probably the best sleep that you can get.
Yeah, you don't have to watch or keep an eye open for anything. Nothing's going to happen there's, while you're sleeping.
It's like you know the kids at school. So the only way that there's a problem is if you get a phone call.
Right.
Now, if you do get a phone call, you have an immediate freak out at first, and then you realize who it is. And it's like, I get a phone call, and it's like, oh, Miss Mike, I ain't talking to that guy. Fuck him. Going back to bed. You know what I'm saying? But if it's a school, then you have your little freak out. But like,
still, don't be fooled. Like I never call this guy during the day.
And you never call me anyway. You just send messages and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the millennial in you popping out.
Yep.
I'm the one who does the phone calls because I'm old and crotchety.
The conversation's way too damn big. I'll still do a phone call, but
yeah,
too much stuff can be said over text on my end.
I get about one sentence in and I'm like, no, this is going to take too long. Screw it.
Can I call? Yeah. Hey, dude, can I call? Yeah. Totally.
How many times do you see that from me? Can I call?
I've moved on to texting people when I get to their house, like rather than knocking on the door. I just do it as a courtesy now because somebody comes and knocks on my door. I got four dogs here. They all go apeshit. So you dude, just don't want to alert that.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You know why I'm saying thank you?
Why?
Because when the time comes where we might or might not have the opportunity to be at each other's houses again, mm-hmm. I mean, you haven't been to mine in years.
It's
but
been
I understand
quite some
why.
Time, yeah.
There's allergies in mine that would
yes.
make your life miserable. But
I have a horrendous cat allergy for anybody that doesn't know, and anybody who owns cats is just like a death trap for me.
But when I do have the opportunity to come back to your place and especially to do a few music things I want to do, I totally prefer the idea. I just figure most people are annoyed by it. But the fact that you said it, I will so make sure
to message
you.
Yeah.
I will message you and not knock on your door because I hate it when people knock on my door.
Oh, dude.
I need to know ahead of time. That like the only time I'll ever come over to your place is if either I've scheduled it ahead of time that I'm coming over to your place.
Yeah.
Like when I would come over there to do the podcast, we knew what time I was going to be there. Roughly, there was like a 15-minute window, depending on traffic and whatnot. There was like a 15-minute window of when I was basically going to show up. And if I was like too early, I would just like drive around and putz around until it was the right time. Because there was that kind of window of this is when you know I should be there.
Right.
And any other time, like over this summer in this COVID-19 time, there have been, what, two times, three times I've stopped by your house to
yeah.
you know, drop something off or pick something up.
Yeah.
You know, curbside situation.
Yep.
And I'm like in total communication with you. Hey, I'm going to be in your neck of the woods today. Is it okay if I drop this thing off?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. All right. I'll let you know when I'm on my way to your house. Cause that's like, I cannot stand, and I've had, it hasn't happened to me in a long time, but I can't stand somebody just dropping by my house. It drives me nuts. If you just drop by my house without letting me know ahead of time, especially in this day and age. Back a long time ago, it was hard not to let people, or it was hard to let people know because we didn't have, you know, a communication device going with us everywhere. Nowadays, there is no damn excuse to drop by somebody's house unannounced. You have a freaking phone.
Exactly.
And if you do, the thing is, if you're dropping by somebody's house that you don't have in your phone unannounced, you probably shouldn't be at that person's house.
Yeah.
And they probably don't really want to see you, because if they wanted to see you, they would be in your freaking phone.
Right, exactly. That's the funny part about, like, I'm curious exactly, like, I don't know if it's already happened or not, but I'm curious when, I guess, we will reach the situation where if we hear, like, a knock at the door, we know it's definitely somebody we don't know, or, like, the red alert goes off, you know what I mean? Because that's, you already got that suspicion.
No, I'm already at that point.
You're already there? Yeah.
I'm at that point.
Me,
where
I'm like if relatively
if
curious.
If there's a knock at my door,
yeah.
If there's a knock at my door, I'm like, oh, right. You're trying to sell me crap.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's
and
exactly
it's open,
what I'm...
It's an open the door, and like, if it's an adult, it's like, I, what you trying to sell me? And they're like, well, we're wanting to talk about, yeah, just tell me what you're trying to sell me.
Right.
You know, if it's a watchtower, or if it's an awake, thank you, but no thank you. I'm not on that side of things. Y'all have a good day. Try to stay hydrated. I'm polite to the Jehovah's Witnesses only because I have had a few and still have a few Jehovah's Witness friends.
Right.
And like, it's just it's what their religion mandates that they do. They're mandated to go door to door and witness. That's the whole point of their name.
Right.
So like, I don't see, I'm not trying to be rude to them and whatnot. That's what their religion tells them they have to do.
Right.
And so like, you know, it's like, nope, not my thing. Thank you very much. You can keep it. I don't need the copies. I know where to get them if I really want them, and I don't. And then anybody that's stopping by the house, I always tell them, you know, try, even if they're trying to sell me something, if they're polite to me and when I tell them no, they take the no, I always say, you know, make sure you stay hydrated, because I'm trying to be nice, not offering them water or nothing.
Right.
Because I'm not that nice. you only get offered water if you actually have something I want to sign up with or purchase and I'm happy with it, then I'll offer you some water.
Okay.
If I don't want your thing, I'm not offering you water. I'm just reminding you to stay hydrated and go on your pleasant way. And then the worst one is the little kids trying to sell me candy bars. I look at them. Now the little kids trying to sell me candy bars, I mess at them. I'm like, look at me. You really think I need more candy bars? Look at this stomach. My fat ass don't need more candy bars. And the kids get like these big old eyes and stuff. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't do it. But thank
what
you.
What's the deal, man? Like, get those Snickers bars away from me. I can pay $1, $1.50 over the grocery store, get a Snickers bar whenever the hell I want. However,
well, I mean,
Girl Scout cookies are a whole different story. It's not often you could just pick up Girl Scout cookies.
Whoa, we don't speak of those.
Why? Well, why?
I ain't talking about drugs on this show, man.
Oh, man. I saw
Dr. Frankenfurter and Captain Kirk put drugs in them cookies. And if you get that reference, points for everybody. Anyway, moving back to the original topic. I'll explain the reference later. I want to leave it hanging for anybody listening. See if somebody that's listening actually gets what I'm referencing there.
Even if you don't get it, you Google and you comment. We will mention it next episode.
Yes, please. Anyway, moving on. So
I don't know what that reference is, and now I have to look it up myself.
I'll tell you after.
Okay.
Heck, I might even tell you at the break. I might not make you wait that long.
All right.
Anyway, we're in fall, of course. We're in the new school year.
Right.
We dealt with the 6 months of insanity of keeping these kids home, feeding these kids extra, realizing,
right,
hopefully many, many parents realizing, oh my God, we need to pay teachers more. We really, really, really need to pay teachers more. We need, and not only pay them more, but we need to have more money funneled into education so that teachers have the appropriate supplies. Because, dear God, the things that they can use to help these kids, they need more funding for schools. We do not need any more F-22 Raptors, damn it. We need more paper and books and pencils and whatever. Okay? Okay. We need more classrooms so that the teacher, because I can't deal with one kid. How does a teacher deal with 30 of these things? And the 30 of them, the teacher can't even smack those 30 kids in the back of the head. I can smack my kid in the back of the head. We need more classrooms. We need more teachers. No more jets. No more tanks. Give us classrooms. That's my personal political view on it. Sorry, we're not supposed to get political, but damn it. More teachers, more classrooms.
Anyway. I don't know where half this conversation went.
Anyway, so we're halfway through the fall semester, right? We're coming into the beginning of October, right? The beginning of October. Halloween is on the distance. Everybody freaking out about, can we trick or treat on Halloween? Because going and begging strangers for candy is so important to us. The one time that we want our kids to ask and take candy from strangers. Normally don't do it, stranger danger. But hey, that night, gimme, 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 I'm a greedy pig. Does explain some of the things in this country. But anyway, moving on. We're getting into October, and the parents are tired. They're tired of their kids at home. They're tired of dealing with all of this. Mm-hmm. But they're not the only ones that are tired. The school officials are tired. Because they're having to rely more and more on the parents, which they don't want to do anyway. They've been working as hard as they can to strip as much power and authority from parents as possible over the last couple of decades and instill as much of it in the school and the teachers as they can.
Mm-hmm.
That, because like a parent's note for a kid to miss a school day means nothing. You better have a doctor's note. Parents are worthless when it comes to that. You can't choose to keep your kid home for a day because you don't think it's the right thing. Sorry, that's a bad mark against your kid. And if you get enough of those, we're going to pull you in for a court. We're going to charge you we're going to charge your kid and charge you for not making your kid go to school. Seriously, it's happened. I've seen it.
Interesting.
It. Saw somebody get arrested as a result of it.
Whoa.
Crazy. Yeah, crazy, crazy stuff.
Okay.
And so, this is the part of the scare tactics is that if they bring in the parents to court when the kids are missed too many days, trying to scare the parents with charging them with stuff, and they try to figure out ways to arrest the parents, they'll drop the charges later, but the parents still have to pay to bail themselves out. So they got to get go to a bail bonds place and pay the money to bail themselves out and have something sitting on their record for a year. Like I said, they drop the charges. They don't pursue them because it's not worth pursuing them. It's a scare tactic to scare the parents into forcing the kids go to school. Seriously.
Interesting.
Seen it with my own eyes. Watch the whole thing happen. Watch the aftermath of it. It's all scare tactics, scaring the parents to basically make the kids go to school so the school's in control. Now, this may sound strange that I want to give more money to the schools for classrooms and teachers, but I'm saying the school wants to be in control. The school needs more of that because if they had more of the resources, they wouldn't have to have the level of control because the resources would make it easier for them to do these things. It doesn't sound like it works, but it does.
Right.
The more resources you have to work with, the easier the job is to do. When you're given limited resources, and especially when the level of resources that you get is based on whether students are there or not. So you have to make students be there to get resources. If the attendance numbers aren't there, they don't give you the resources. So you have to crack down on attendance and force attendance because then otherwise you have no money.
This sounds like police ticket quotas, man.
This is actually, it is. I mean, do you know who enforces attendance at school?
The
truant officers. Who are police officers that work at the schools as truant officers.
What?
So it is exactly that. It is exactly that. And that's not the way we should be doing education.
The school is paid by attendant student. Well, that makes sense. The only difference is with college is that you enroll in the course and that's it. So,
once you enroll, then it's paid for the whole time.
If it's paid for, you're done.
With public education, it's paid the amounts are paid by
the attendance
that the kids are attending in school, which is why they want you to send your kid to at least before COVID, they want you to send your kid to school unless they've been throwing up, and then if they get sick at school, they'll send them home at a certain time because once they're there for a certain amount of time in the morning, that counts as attendance for the day.
What the fuck, are you serious? Is that what's been going on with that?
100% serious.
That is what the standard is.
Yeah, basically.
So the standard is keep them here until lunch and then send them home.
Basically.
That's ridiculous.
That's why they want you to at least, unless you're throwing up, they want you to at least, or you have something that is known to be contagious, they want you to at least try to come to school. Like if you have a kid with head lice, they want you to at least check in to make sure that whether the kid's got it. No, hold on, let me finish. They want you to check in to make sure that the kid's clear of head lice. If they still have the head lice, they have to be sent home. But if they checked in, they get a partial payment for the day. So you can't just call and say, yeah.
We're getting deep into the logistics and the politics.
We have to figure out a new way to fund and run public education because this method does not. It doesn't do anything to help anything, and I mean, it gets even worse when you take it in, when you take into consideration different neighborhoods and the fact that schools are the main way that schools are funded are based on property taxes. So nicer neighborhoods get all the good stuff in their school, and poorer neighborhoods.
I mean, that's a whole other conversation too, man.
But it all really comes down to how we fund schools. The way that we set up funding for schools is so stupid and so backwards and so counterintuitive to the purpose of it, which is to educate the population so that we have an educated population when they become adults. The problem is we don't have that, again, as is evidenced by certain things that have happened in this country over the last so many years.
But again, we're coming into, like I say, the
halfway point roughly of the first semester or the first quarter of school, really.
Right.
We're coming into this part of the fall, and parents are tired. Schools are tired of trying to make the ends meet and make the money work out and have the people that pay this, authorize the money for the schools, be happy with the way that the online education is going.
Right.
And complaints left and right about all these things. And the COVID situation hasn't necessarily gotten much better. There's some places where things have gotten a little bit better, but I'm sorry, when you have the entire cardboard cutouts of the entire cast of town of South Park in your football stadium for your football game because you can't have people in it, and you're in a place like Denver, Colorado, which is for the most part, other than the airport, is basically kind of an isolated city, you're still having these concerns about COVID-19, but people are still pushing for things to open because we don't care about people dying. We care about the money that's being lost because that's more important. More proof, by the way, that in many groups, money is more important than people's lives. You have all this pushback. Well, the schools have come up with a plan to restart school, kinda. And we're going to take a break right now.
Okay.
When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what is the plan being rolled out, what's called the cohort plan.
This already sounds terrible.
It's something
they use the word cohort in the name of the plan?
Yes, it is a cohort plan.
Oh, boy.
So all we'll right, be back yeah, in a I'm minute interested. To, we'll be back in just a moment to give you some details on this, all right?
Cool.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thexennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we're back talking about school.
Such a positive experience. Things we always loved.
Yes. You know, getting thrown in trash cans happened to me once. Getting caught behind doors happened to me a couple of times. Luckily, I was skinny enough back in those days to actually crawl out the top of the door.
It took like four people to put me in a trash can, but it happened.
It only took one person. He was a big dude. We had a dude. I had a dude that I went to high school with, and I was about the same height I am now. So I was about 5'6" in high school, and I only weighed about 130 pounds then, because there was like a third of what I am now. this guy was like, he was only a year older than me. I think maybe 2 years older than me. Mm-hmm. But he came from a family of fairly big people. And he was like 6'3" and maybe 250, 275 at that point.
Yeah.
And like his name, His real name was just a pretty normal real name. I'm not going to divulge his real name because I don't have his permission. His nickname, however, only people that went to school with us would know his nickname. And this is what everybody, including the scary thing, this is what the teachers called him.
Okay.
So when the teachers are calling you by a nickname, you know that that nickname is like, that's a solid foundation nickname. Normally the teachers won't agree to call you by the nickname. They still want to call you by your actual name.
Right. They'll call you like by your last name or your full name. Yeah. Or sometimes even your proper first name. Still, they'll insist on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, everybody at school called this guy Moose.
The teachers everybody called him did. Moose?
He was okay with it. That's what he had everybody
Moose means
call
you're
him.
A big motherfucker. That's what Moose means.
And he was a big motherfucker. He really was. The only upside is I was kind of fast back then. Again, 5'6", 130 pounds, 135 pounds, whatever. You can get a little bit of speed. I wasn't super fast. I wasn't like, you know, trying out for a sport type of fast.
Right.
But I was fast for a normal person. And, you know, big guy like that, not so fast necessarily. Some are.
Right.
I've seen some big guys that are fast. They usually, again, go into like sports. The NFL, you get offensive linemen that are, you know, 350-pound, 6'4" guys that can still run like a 4.7 40.
Right.
That's pretty damn fast for a guy that big. It's a lot of weight to get moving that fast.
Right.
So when we'd be doing PE and like running the track and PE and stuff, I used to like run up behind him, jump and hit as high on his body as I could, which is like his shoulder, and then just keep freaking running because there was no way in hell he was going to catch up to me.
Right.
I wouldn't hit him hard or nothing. It was just like, you know, me being a little twit annoying him. And one time or another, there was, it wasn't necessarily a vicious thing he did. It was like, you know, teenagers playing around, play fighting, wrestling, that kind of stuff. And he picked me up and put me in a trash can. There really wasn't anything I could do about it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because this dude was just huge, and it's just like, yoink, you're off the ground. And I got 2 feet of air below me. Like, okay, what the hell am I going to do now? Here, I'm going to set you in this thing. What the hell? Hey, that's what I can do. Okay, I guess that's what you can do. There's not much I can do about it. So... we eventually, as most things happen, we eventually became pretty good friends. And even when we were friends, I'd still do the smack him on the shoulder and keep running away from him because it was just, you know, teenage kids doing playful banter stuff. But
right.
Yeah. As the one time I found myself in a trash can, the behind the door happened when I was a little bit younger. And again, I could at least climb up that. But anyway, school was a fun time. School has become even more fun time as I'm a parent. Like I said before the break, the schools are implementing this new plan. They're rolling out this new idea plan. And they're rolling it out in a very specific manner. And it's kind of funny because I'm one of those people that I like to pay attention to the exact words that people say when they're talking about things, especially when they're giving announcements about new programs and rolling out new programs and they're trying to tell people about them. Oftentimes when, and you remember this probably from all the jobs that you've had, where your whatever retail place you're working for has a new sale happening or a new promotion
right.
happening.
Right.
And they give you specific scripts that you're supposed to use. And they are clear yep. that in many of the things you have to stay very strict to the script because the language they're using in the script is used specifically. And it's used specifically so that they can try to argue the exact thing that they want later. When customers or when whoever this new program is for try to say that they don't understand it properly or try to get something more out of it or try to get it to be actually helpful for them when, in fact, it's only helpful for the company and the customer is supposed to be duped by it, which does happen, sadly, far too frequently.
Right.
The companies hide behind the language that they teach you to use. And if you don't use the exact language and the company has to end up giving the whoever the customer is or whoever the client is, whatever, that has to end up giving them more than what the company wants to, you get in a lot of trouble as the person working there, right?
Right, right. Absolutely.
And I remember drilling into you probably at some point or another the Blockbuster Rewards sales pitch.
Oh my God! You're not going to quiz me on a Blockbuster Rewards sales pitch like 20 years after.
I have purged as much of that as possible from my mind. I remember more of it than I want to remember, but I've tried to purge as much of it from my mind as possible. But I was, for our store anyway, I was pretty good at that pitch. I only know one other person, I think, that sold the rewards card more than me at our store. That was kind of my jam, was selling the rewards card. And I could explain it to people in a way that they understood it. I also could give them the best possibility of benefits. There was good things about that card. That card, if used the right way, was actually really helpful. The thing is, if you didn't rent movies regularly, it was useless to you.
Right.
And it would just be – it was just a burden that you had to pay for. If you rented a whole bunch of movies, like if you had a big family that you were constantly like 2 and 3 times a week renting movies for, it could actually help you and save you money. You just had to rent the right things and do the right things with it. I've seen families that saved every time that they come in there, they save like $7 or $8. And if you do that over, you know, let's say it's $7 twice a week, that's $14 a week. That can add up pretty quickly.
Right.
And so if there are people that were going to rent these movies anyway,
right,
you have a way to make it a little bit better for them and save them a little bit money, it's a freaking no-brainer. So there were things that were good about that membership. If you used it the right way, it helped you. And then if you used it enough, you got bumped up to the gold status, and then it helped you even more.
Right.
So, and I knew a few gold members. In fact, my wife's stepdad was a gold member. Interestingly enough, they were at the other store in town. They would go to the other store in town, not to the store that we worked at.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Which is why I only technically saw my wife one time before I actually personally met her. And I was funny story in that I was actually selling, I wasn't working register that day. I was selling used videos. Remember we had that little lobby outside the first set of doors, and there was like a little lobby, and then there was the second set of doors.
Right.
I was out in the little lobby with a table, trying to convince people to take some of the movies and go inside and buy them. It was like, you know, 2 for so much amount or 3 for so much amount.
Right.
We were trying to get rid of all the extra things that we had. And she picked up a movie and said, I don't know, is this one any good? And I said, oh yeah, that's a great movie. Had never seen the movie.
Never seen it at all. Of course.
So
that's kind of part of the day.
She bought it that day. You know, when we finally really actually quote unquote met and started dating, she said, hey, you want to watch this? You said you liked it. I'm like, when did I say I liked it? Because, well, I remember meeting you before we met at Blockbuster, and you suggested I buy it because you said it was a good movie. I started laughing. She's like, what? What's so funny? I've never seen that movie in my entire life. Just, what? You lied to me? I'm like, I was working and selling things. Of course I'm going to tell you it's a good movie.
Please tell me what movie it was.
It's a bad movie.
What movie is it?
It's actually become one of my favorite movies. One of those
really?
That most people would consider a guilty pleasure, but it's one of those movies I just like to put on and not have to think because it's a stupid movie.
What is it?
Night at the Roxbury.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's a stupid, silly movie, and my wife still loves it to this day. And it's one of those that, like, that's a nostalgia movie, and she still gives me shit about it.
Richard Grieco?
It's a good movie, huh?
Yeah.
Emilio, the Emilio. Mighty Duck Man. That's actually a hint towards the mystery in the first half of the podcast. Oh,
he told me over the break. Y'all's jealous hints. Now.
Anyway, back to school. God, you get me on these tangents.
We've been doing this for like 10 minutes.
The schools have come out with this new rollout plan. We'll get to the rollout plan now.
Yeah. Especially the name of the plan. What here's the hell
plan.
Is that?
It is a cohort plan.
It sounds so
And this
so
is the
weird.
Idea behind it. What they are requesting the ability to do is have, and this isn't just happening here in Northern California. This is happening out in the states, in the South, in the East.
Oh no!
I have specific people talking about it from Arkansas that they're using this cohort plan, and the reason that the word cohort is being used is what they are allowing is cohorts of students, cohorts being specific groups of students, to come back in. It'll be the same groups each time.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to come back in on certain days of the week, specifically in most places, 2 days a week that these specific cohorts will come in. One cohort will come in, say, Monday, Tuesday. In some of the school areas, they'll do a like heavy clean on everything on Wednesday, and then the other cohort will come in Thursday, Friday.
This already sounds like a really bad idea.
And on the days that you're not, your cohort is not in school, you will be supposed to be doing online education with possibly the cohort that's in school. This is the part where it's starting to get a little bit fuzzy. It's what's going to happen on the days that you're off. The original, some of the things I've heard is that you will be logging into, the kids will be logging into the classroom where the, so let's say there's two cohorts, let's say cohort A, cohort B. A is on Monday, Tuesday.
Okay.
B is on Thursday, Friday.
You mean cohort, okay. So you mean cohort group A and group B, right?
Yes. Cohort group A, cohort group B.
Okay.
So when cohort group A is at school on Monday and Tuesday, cohort group B will be logging into possibly classroom session of cohort A in school to do their schoolwork from a distance. And then when cohort B is in school, cohort A will be doing the same thing.
Stays home and streaming.
And doing it from home. So, this is the plan that's being rolled out for the schools to try to get the kids back into school.
Okay, so wait. I have a myriad of questions. I'm going to try to simplify it as much as I can.
With what I can.
Yeah. Okay. So the first, I'm already seeing the potential of a lot of different problems here. So let's assume that the school is small enough to have only two groups. And I'm assuming this is cohort groups per classroom or cohort groups per school. Do we know that already? Like, is this group like 10 students or is this group 100 students? Like, what is the level?
At this point, most of the schools are focusing now, and this one I can say for sure in the Northern California area.
Okay.
Most of the schools are focusing now on kids that need more, the kids that have more educational needs and need more in-person, work for education. English is second language students that are behind in classes and have remedial classes and that kind of stuff they're taking, special needs students. Currently, at least in Northern California, that's what they're doing. Because we are
So as far as splitting the students up, what they're doing is they're splitting them up by their learning
educational needs.
Their educational needs. Okay. So you have you have a special needs cohort. You have ESL cohorts.
As like cohort A is being built, cohort B is being built, okay? These are being built around the ideas of we have X number of students at our school that we feel from our entire population of school. We have X number of students at our school that we feel are the ones that really would benefit most from coming back to online to in-person instruction early. Coming back first, they really need the opportunity to come back to in-person instruction because the online instruction is not providing enough for them. They really benefit more from having in-person. So they come up with that total number, right?
Right.
That total number of kids that they feel are the ones that need the most work back at school, that need the most, that would benefit the most from being back in the actual school environment. That's the group that gets divided into basically these two cohorts. So they figure out the X number of students that they feel need to be back in school first. That X number is divided in two and put on these two separate dates.
This is the weirdest 2020 remake of The Warriors I have ever heard of. This is going to bomb at the box office so fucking bad.
Well, the thing about this is one of the key words that they're throwing out here for this.
Right.
This is a very important key word.
Okay.
To be a part of this, you're told as a parent that, hey, these cohorts are happening and your kid is a part of this cohort. It is a voluntary choice to send them back.
Okay, so this could very well simply fall the fuck apart immediately.
Very much so.
But it's also getting really serious for a minute, the potential of this could be a failure on so many levels. It's not even funny. Like, you look at the first place that my brain went was, okay, what happens if one kid from cohort group A is sick?
Shut the whole school down.
Shut the whole school down? The whole school?
Shut it down again.
shut the whole fucking school down. Not isolate the group.
Nope. Shut it all down.
Shut the whole fucking... Then why the hell are you doing this? Are you trying to do this just to appease parents?
Yes.
This sounds like a nightmare.
Hey,
what kind of a risk are you putting the teachers at?
This is the exact
same thing. And the other students.
This is the exact same thing as, oh, you can put these messages on the end zone. Oh, you can wear these sayings and phrases on your hats and the back of your helmets.
So this is more of a political decision than it is an actual school or educational decision.
No, this is school and education. Even the school and education is pushing for this because the pressure has become too great from not just the parents, but the pressure has become too great from the education system beyond this, the federal education system, the state education system. They're having to pour money into all of this, and they don't have the same results that they are used to looking at. Attendance is only one part of what they look at when they're looking at funding schools. The other thing that they look at when they're talking about funding schools, they look at grades and they look at test scores.
And are the test scores going down because everybody's learning at home?
What it comes down to is not about them going down. They want to see paperwork to show the grades and the test scores. They don't have the mountain of paperwork, the mountain of things that they want to be able to show that it's worth keeping these schools open, keeping the teachers being paid, keeping the damn lights on. We have such this infrastructure built on the schools.
Hold on one fucking second here. This funding the schools in the middle of this bullshit, that's the financial problem we have? That sounds completely lopsided and asinine, especially in the middle of everything else that is going on at this point, in the middle of all of it. There is so much evidence that proves that a lack of education puts us in these types of positions, and... I mean, I'm thinking a little bit big picture. This is like almost class warfare level kind of shit that I'm looking at.
It is.
But
here's the thing. I can explain all this to you without you having to try to go too deep into it.
Yeah, I apologize for that kind of reaction. I do, but it doesn't make any sense to me.
This is the way school is structured. This is the way we have structured public education, is that we don't give funding unless these certain boxes are checked. It's not about teaching kids. It's about checking boxes. It's about test scores. It's about having all of that mountain of paperwork.
Why don't they just start selling them military-grade school supplies and fucking radars then and raise their budget back up like we do with the police?
I apologize for going there, but half the reason
of the lopsidedness with the funding has to do with the fact that it's just like any other government-based foundation. You don't get funding if you don't use the money you're allotted. If you go, oh, you didn't spend all this money this year, they give you less money the next year. That's part of the proof that's necessary, and I understand that it exists. It doesn't make sense to me why it exists that way. This kind of bullshit is half the reason why arts and music and other very, very important skills that can be learned in school are not taught in school. It's because the budget keeps getting cut for stupid shit.
Here's the thing, man. You're right when it comes to arts and music and all of that. That's why they have cut funding for all those things, because they have no way to show proof that arts and music is doing anything for kids in the way that these people want proof. They want mountains of paperwork. They want homework pages they can look at and test scores that they can look at. What can you test somebody on music that they learned all of the notes and all of the chords? You can have them play something. Well, great, they learned how to play a song. That means nothing to the people that are providing the funding for schools. They want something that they feel is solid and concrete. And any arts are not solid and concrete. Sports are.
This is not a sports are? It's an entertainment platform. That's why.
No, because sports bring in money. When your high school sports teams do well, people donate money to the school.
No, I understand.
People show up to watch the sports. So art doesn't bring in money.
No, that's the reason why they do that is because sports are an entertainment platform. The reason why people fund high school sports is because they think their kids will make it into college, and then they think they'll make it into the NFL. There's this higher sense of it's all directly related, right? You think that you're going to end up becoming the next Steve Young if you're a kick-ass quarterback in XYZ high school out in fucking anywhere. Like,
sorry, that doesn't happen. You have to be a descendant of Brigham Young if you're going to be the next Steve Young. It's just how it works. And you have to,
that's the mindset. That's sold. That's sold by I apologize for getting political again. The reason why that concept is sold is because it's sold by the NFL. It is sold by them to hype up their platform. That's why the NBA works the way that it does. The NHL can't even fucking touch what the NBA and the NFL do. Even Major League Baseball is, I mean, maybe they're a close second, but let's be fucking real. The reason why there's so much capability in money being thrown into sports is because people have this stardom in their eyes. The difference is that formal music education doesn't teach you to be Slash. It doesn't teach you to be Metallica. It doesn't teach you to be fucking Jimi Hendrix. It teaches you to be... It teaches you to learn Bach or Beethoven or Miles Davis, but fucking 90% of the people still, and I it's horrible, 90% of the people don't know who these types of people are. Like, really, they know they're big names, but they're fucking centuries old, some of them, right?
It's just so disconnected. It's not disconnected, because what it comes down to is it comes down to one basic thing. The funding for school comes down to a basic thing. The things that they're still okay with, like sports programs, it all comes down to one basic thing: where the money is. Because that's what drives.
Right.
And this is where the problem comes. As long as the question of money is the driving force in education,
right?
As long as that's the case. We are going to have nothing but problems with our education, because the value of an education is not something you can quantify with money. We have tried to multiple times. People try to say that going to one college and getting your degree at one college is more meaningful than getting your degree at another college. Yeah, maybe on your first application, because people have made that a quantifiable thing. If you go to this medical school, oh boy, you must have learned something, because this is a prestigious medical school. Does that make you a better doctor than the person that went to this other medical school? No, it doesn't. All it does is prove that you were able to pay for something that had a better name than that other person. It doesn't make you any better at what you do. The problem is we've assigned a quantitative value to some of these things that don't really deserve it. And you can't do that with education, because the value of education is far beyond something that we can put a dollar sign on. But that's what we continue to do. And that's a part of what this is. A part of this is being able to try to put a dollar sign on it. We need those butts in the seats. The parents are getting antsy. They want butts in the seats. We need to make it look like we're doing something to put the butts in the seats. The people, the bean counters that are sitting at the top of everything, they want to see the butts in the seats. Because they're not seeing the butts in the seats, they're not wanting to fund the things that we have to do, the ways that we have to come up with all of this stuff, getting devices out to every family. I have three kids that are doing distance learning through all of this, and school has provided only one device for the kids to use. We've had to use our own personal devices, which, you know, first world problems, wah.
Right.
But still.
Understood. Fully understood.
The fact that they're supposed to be given the availability of these things to be able to use is just... and not there, because funding. We don't want to provide the funding for it. We don't want to provide it. Again, you mentioned it with the police departments. Oh, let's not defund our police departments. We need to have tanks in our police departments, but you don't want to make sure that all the kids have tablets and Chromebooks that they can use to be able to get education done in the new and modern age. I mean, teaching kids life skills, if they ever taught life skills in school anymore, which in most education systems they don't, doing something as simple as filling out an application. How major of a thing was that in our life? How many applications did you fill out?
Do you realize how important it is to learn how to write a resume when you're 16 years old?
Like, writing a resume
is super
important.
How to do that.
Where? What are you going to write a resume on? On a computer, right? Where are you going to do applications? On computers or your cell phone. We don't do, there's no handwritten applications anymore. There's no hand, there's no typed out resumes. None of that stuff happens anymore. Everything is done via the computer. Everything should be taught in a way via the computer anymore, because that's the direction that our world is going. If you're a household that doesn't have some kind of a computer, hell, for a couple of years there, our household was one that did, that had tablets for the kids to use, but no actual computer. We had to get a computer just so that we can try, could try to get into a new house, because it was impossible to apply for housing without a computer. Most places don't let you do an application to rent a house anymore with regular paper writing it in. They want you to do it on a computer.
What was it?
Everything is done this way nowadays.
I have a total, like, kind of almost somewhat related side point. I saw this meme earlier that was crazy, because it was in a printed book from like 1815 or something like that, and it was a principal from a grade school that was rallying against paper, like paper products being used in the classroom, because it was taking away from the art or the practice of using chalk and tablets. And he was complaining that kids nowadays in grade school can't use chalk and tablets without getting chalk or a mess all over everywhere. What happens when all the paper runs out?
There were people complaining back in like the 19 teens,
yeah,
and 1920s,
yeah,
about this epidemic of people writing what at that time was a fairly robust public transportation system in big cities.
Oh, huh.
Like the early subways and trains and whatnot.
Yeah.
And they would how horrible it was that they don't talk to each other anymore. They just have their nose in a newspaper reading. And this is just a horrible new invention, this newspaper.
Oh, how dare these people mind their own fucking business?
this is destroying communication. That's rotting kids' minds. It's like, people, the world keeps moving on.
Yeah.
You need to move with the world. Don't let it catch you behind. Many
Absolutely.
Of the mistakes that we make is we hold on to those traditional things that we need to have.
Yeah.
Instead of moving the hell on with what is happening.
One of my favorite boomer arguments right now is anybody who thinks that they're better than fucking obviously millennials get the short end of the stick on this, right? But my favorite thing is that my favorite boomer argument is, We would be able to write in code because we know how to write in cursive. Motherfucker, millennials are in their 30s. They're in their early to mid 30s. They know what cursive is. And Gen Zers, for the most part, know and understand what cursive is too. It's not completely lost. But the fact that,
no,
like,
and it was stupid. I remember writing in cursive in school.
I fucking
and
hated cursive.
Graded on it. And thinking how stupid this is. What is the damn point in writing this way and being graded on it? Why are you doing this?
I don't even write in upper and lowercase anymore. I just write in all caps because everybody can read it.
And it's this insanity of you had to, again, this is per another discussion you and I had today. This is taking something that should be art and trying to grade art. You can't grade art.
Right,
but
exactly.
That's why they don't want art, is because you can't grade it. Well, that's what they want to see, is they want to see grades. They want to see grades. They want to see butts in the seats. They don't care the risk of it falling apart. They don't care about the difficulty, the inherent difficulty that exists with this kind of setup. They don't care how this can be even more impactful to parents' lives than what the online system is. Moreover, some of them aren't even prepared for what they're going to do with some of the online programs, because, you know, the kids are coming back, and how are we supposed to do this the same way? Because we have to focus on the kids in the classroom. We can't just sit in front of the computer and do it. Even though I've been to college classes where, and this was 20 years ago, I was in college classes that were televised, that on TV instead of on the internet, because we didn't have the internet. Then you had to actually tune into a specific cable channel, there was a local cable channel to watch the college class.
Yeah.
You couldn't necessarily respond, but you could at least watch it and then, you know, send. We did have some internet, so you could send emails to the teacher later, but
I have a confession to make.
You could actually call into the class via a telephone.
Oh, that's cool.
Setup. But I've been the student watching the class at home, and I've been the student in the class while the class is being filmed. So it can be done. Colleges have shown that it can be done.
I actually have a confession to make based on that. I used to turn those on in the middle of the day and just watch them without actually being a student for the course, and I learned some crazy shit.
You should have been on. I wish you'd have seen the one where I was in an American history class and they were talking about World War One.
Uh-huh.
And the movie Johnny Get Your Gun.
Oh, nice.
And
I love it.
So what did I bring up?
Oh, you brought up the one video, man.
Of course I did. And
yeah.
I even played the song. I even got the song to be played a little bit during the class because I'm that kind of a badass.
Hell yeah.
But anyway, and you're right. The second a kid gets sick, they're going to shut the whole program down.
Dude, a week. Do you realize that you're doing this? How old are these kids?
Well, I mean, we're talking kids from various ages.
So you've gotten what, like 6 years old, all the way up to like, all the way up to like 11th grade.
I don't know what all the. I'll be admitting I don't know the exact ages of all of them, but most of them, I'll say. So this is a little bit more information. Most of them are going to be junior high school, so we're talking a little bit older. But still, one kid to test positive.
Yeah.
And they're going to shut the whole thing down.
Exactly.
But
I'm sitting here thinking there's like 7-8-year-olds. I was like, you can't keep a kid's finger out of their nose for longer than 5 minutes.
And they'll make sure, just like when you go to like doctor's offices and whatnot nowadays, they're going to have school nurse being temping everybody before they go.
Oh my God.
Into school each day. Every single day, you're going to have to line waiting to get temped and make sure you're 6 feet apart when you're in line. But here's the key. Here's the kicker.
And y'all thought metal detectors at the front doors of some of these like not as well-to-do schools was the big deal. Wait until you see this shit kick off.
Here's where the kicker comes. Here's where the kicker comes, in my mind anyway. As a parent having to think about this. Again, I'm very particular about when words are used. And the key word that's used here is voluntary.
Yeah, that's the thing.
If your kid is in one of the cohorts, you don't have to send them. It is a voluntary choice to send them. And the reason why they're making it a choice, the reason why they're making it voluntary, is, again, about following the money and seeing the money. If they make it voluntary for your kid to go, and you choose for your kid to go, and somebody in your kid's class does have coronavirus and does infect your kid and does infect your family, if that happens, yes, that's a big if. I'm not saying it's not. But if that happens, you can't sue the school for it because you voluntarily chose to send your kid back. This absolves them of any and all legal ramifications. At least that's their attempt.
For lack
Somebody
of attendance?
Will still win a lawsuit at some point.
Yeah.
But that, their attempt is going to be, and that's why they use the word voluntary, their argument will be, well, you chose to have your kid come back. We didn't make you have your kid come back.
So they can't go after the school if their kid gets sick.
Yep.
I mean, to be completely honest, I would say good on them for that because that makes more sense to them to do that rather than force the kids to come to school. This puts the decision back on the parents.
But that's the thing is, this now puts the pressure on the parents to send their kids back to what may or may not be a safe situation.
Right.
And not knowing how well they're going to, the problem is we don't know how well they're still going to support the kids that are staying at home. The kids who are offered A or B and opt not to be in either one. What does this do to their online education now? They were getting a specific set of online education. Now it's going to be changed because the kids that they're working with in these various classes that were part of this may not get the same opportunities. You know what I'm saying?
Boy, that's okay.
So there are changes that can happen.
Well, I mean, okay. What I don't like about this is, first off, what I don't like about it is the potential for danger. Because then you've got more than one, the conflict that you create, there are so many different conflicts that you create. You have students that don't want to go to school whose parents want them to go. You have students that want to go to school whose parents don't want them to go. And the next question that I have is, for those students that don't go, they will be getting a different education experience than the students that do. Not whether or not one would be better or not. That's completely up to question. We have no fucking clue what's going to happen.
Well, here's the thing. They're specifically looking at this point, the kids that are in most need of in-person instruction.
Mm-hmm.
So that means when those kids are in school getting their in-person instruction, again, the teachers are not going to be able to teach the kids who are distance learning still in the same way. The families that choose not to let to have their kids go,
is there
they're not going to be able to provide them the same teaching that they were providing before. Because before, they could focus on teaching the groups at different, you know, in different ways through the online. But when they have the kids in the building with them, it's going to be a whole different scenario how they're going to deal with it. Because they're going to be focusing more on the kids that are in the building and less on the kids that are at home still distance learning for whatever reason the parents or kids choose not to be there.
So let me ask something. So your experience, you actually having gone to college at a class or during a and attended a class, part of a class that was televised.
Yes.
And you've been on both ends of it, right? You've been on the end of calling in from home to ask questions and being able to ask and be in person.
Yes.
It's very obvious to me that the experience is extremely different. And that makes sense. And now, any of the classes that I took, like I've taken online courses, and yes, the experience is very different in the online courses, but it wasn't a video Zoom call online course. It was like, here's the curriculum, here's my email if you have questions, because it happened like 10 years ago. But my question is that, like, is there that much of a disconnect when you're at home? Like, you still have the capability of asking questions. You still have the capability of having those questions answered. And it obviously is at a different pace. But do you personally feel that that experience changed the way that you were able to process the information that you were given?
Well, from my personal experience, no.
Okay.
But I am not, I was not as a college student, nor was I as a student, standard educational student, in elementary school, junior high, high school. I was not a student that was one of those students that are part of these groups, that are the at-risk students, the students that would benefit most from the in-person learning. I don't want to say anything to sound like I'm talking myself up. I'll talk up my hamburger eating ability, but that's about it. I was a pretty smart kid, man. I mean, the last math class I took was trigonometry, and we stopped the people that were in that class decided we didn't want to do it past the first semester of our senior year because it was the only class that we actually had to really study in. And we already had enough math credits to graduate, so we decided we didn't want the class anymore, and they just stopped the class because there wasn't any students to take it. I mean,
just ditch the class and still get the credits, or what?
We just got one semester of credit. They
that's
only
all you needed.
Taught it for
so
a semester.
They didn't care. So then you had
we didn't
a break
need
class
that one semester
for like a half hour or whatever.
At that time, you only needed 3 years of math class to be able to graduate from high school. And all of us that were in the trig class, we already had passed 3 years of math class. We already taken algebra, geometry, and algebra 2. So we didn't need a trigonometry class. We were just taking it because they said, hey, we can do a trigonometry class for you guys so you can prepare for college. We're like, cool. We took it for the first semester, and we were all like, we have to work too hard to get our A in this class. We don't want to do this anymore. And we all decided we didn't want to do the class, and it got dropped. And we all had A's in the class. We just didn't want to do it.
I was going to say, did that affect your GPA for dropping the class?
No, we didn't drop the class. We told the administration that all the kids that were in it, we weren't going to take it anymore.
That's insane.
We didn't have the need for it. So we finished the first semester and the class disappeared, and we all had an elective that we took that semester because nobody wanted to take the trigonometry class anymore. We didn't need to take it. There was no need for it. We were already all going to graduate.
Cool.
All we had to pass was our English class and our history class that year because you need 4 years, four semester years of those.
Right.
To graduate, or you did at that time.
Yeah.
You needed that to graduate. So we had to pass our English class and we had to pass our history class, and we didn't go to a school that was big enough that we could have taken like two English classes in our junior year or two history classes or whatever. We didn't have that capability, so we had to do it in our senior year of school. We couldn't set it up to where technically, everybody that was in that trigonometry class, if they had gone to a bigger school where you could have doubled up, like instead of taking extra electives, you could have doubled up academic courses in different years, we all would have graduated as juniors. We all had good enough grades. We all did well enough in school. So I was definitely not the kid that like needed one-on-one teacher instruction time. You could give me a packet of work to do and I could figure it out on my own. And that's not saying I'm not trying to say I'm super smart or anything, but I was a fairly smart kid. I wasn't dumb. And moreover, I wasn't somebody who had any kind of intellectual issue that made it so that I needed a little extra help. My mind worked as well as it need to. That when you're talking about special needs individuals who, as a result of birth, genetics, whatever specific issues that put them at an educational disadvantage because they don't have what we consider normal cognitive abilities. They're not neurotypical. When you're talking about people who are English is a second language learners who are trying to understand a mismatched, hodgepodge, screwed up language that contradicts itself in all of its rules over and over again.
Yeah.
And try to exist in that and then learn all of your classes in that language because it's not available in whatever your first language is for you to learn history or math or anything else. You have to learn the English first to be able to do all of the other classes. These are people that will benefit the most from having a much more robust education system, from having in-person instruction as opposed to the online instruction, because some of them require you to literally have one-on-one moments with the child as the teacher, one-on-one moments with the child, working through the things for as long as it takes. And when you're dealing with the online education, you're given blocks of time for each one of the classes, and that's what you're given, man. You don't have much to work with beyond that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And when they have the in-person education, I personally have a lot of experience when it comes to special needs education. There are some things that require for the students that you have to be able to sit and physically work with them on, hand over hand, working on things. And it's just something just as small as them being able to tell you their name, their phone number, their address, and what day of the week it is, and then get them to write it out legibly. And you have to be there with them, coaching each piece out of them, hand over hand writing with them, showing them models of how to write. And if you're on the online education and you don't have parents who sit right there with the kid and work with the kid on that, the online stuff doesn't necessarily have as much success.
Right.
So I understand the idea of them wanting to get the kids back in the classroom, because for those kids, it can be a success. But then what that does is that makes it so, yes, the kids that are in the classroom are going to get time devoted to them to make them successful. But that's that much less time that can be done online for the kids that have been doing the online education and that are staying home because of the health risks. Because now the time that you normally would have taken a block of your day out to work with these kids, it's not there anymore in the same way.
Well, you're literally going the other direction with it. The only thing that you're doing that's the same on both sides is providing some semblance of education to a group of kids, and that's it. But that's where you stop. The entire experience is completely backwards. So I got a question. What happens if a teacher gets sick? What happens if, like, school shuts down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I give this, like, a week, maybe a couple of weeks before we start seeing, and that's generous as hell.
And what's funny about this is
before we start seeing some serious backlash, like not just backlash from parents, you'll see backlash from parents over a school's decision to shut down because one of the students got sick.
Yeah. Cause why? We had our kids back in there. We changed our schedule again to make it so that the kids could be back in there. And what's funny is you can look at a parallel in something we talked about 2 weeks ago. Look at the parallel in the NFL. You have the first game of the season at Kansas City, with the fans booing the moment of silence.
Yeah.
Echoing, of course, court decisions later. You have the fans booing, and what happens at that game? You get 10 people that get infected with COVID-19 from one person that was there infected. And these are, again, people were social distancing, but that group that person was in, whole group got sick from it, from being there.
Yeah.
And it's like we've seen where this goes. Every time people get together, look at what happened with Sturgis and the motorcycle rally in Sturgis. That just, that's already a boiling pot of infection. With this, that just adds, here, let's add a little bit more infection into it than what's already there. You're already going to get your herpes and your chlamydia.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and put Smash Mouth and Trapped in the concert too.
Why not? I mean,
make this worse?
If Smash Mouth and Trapped were there, it might actually make it better, because do we need them?
No, they were at the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. They played
it. I know, and that's what I'm saying. Do we need them anymore? I'm not saying we need them anymore. Any music that they may have had that has any kind of cultural significance or reference, you know, it's already in the Shrek movie, at least.
I was going to say, somebody once told me, man.
Yeah. Well, the world might roll then. Let's hope.
Yeah, right.
Beyond that, I mean, really, do we need them anymore? Luckily,
a lot of them definitely ain't the sharpest tools in the shed. That's for sure. God, we could keep going with this.
and hey,
why do I know this song?
Because I know you saw the Shrek movie because I was there with you when you saw the Shrek movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we're old enough to have seen Shrek in the movie theater.
Yep,
that's just I even remember the day.
Weirdest date I ever went on.
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? Who are you with? Were you with Rob or were you with Taryn at that point? Who are you dating on that date? I guess you're dating Rob for that date. Because if you're dating Taryn, that's a little weird, bro. I'm much more okay with you having been Rob's date for that movie.
I would be much more okay with being Rob's date than Taryn's, for sure.
That's, I mean,
it would make more sense.
He's a nice guy.
He is a real nice guy.
He's a nice guy. Apparently he's a good cuddler. I don't know from experience, but apparently he's a good cuddler.
He seems like he would be.
Yeah. He's got kind of that cuddly form about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's kind of squishy.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, this is what's happening with the schools, man. This is the direction they're going. And again, I've been focusing a little more on the at-risk students and the special needs, but that's what they're going after first, is trying to get these kids back in first. In other places, they're doing it with, in other places like Arkansas, where, I mean, I don't want to be insensitive to special needs individuals because it is an important part of my life to not be. But I mean, in Arkansas, everybody needs a little help with their education because the education is god awful out there.
Yeah.
So the populace is not very intelligent, and not as a result of special needs, as a result of living in Arkansas. So,
living in the state of Arkansas.
Yeah. I mean,
I have family out in Tennessee too. So
yeah, I have family out in Arkansas, and I would say this directly to their face because I almost moved to Arkansas years ago, and it was the best thing that ever happened, probably other than my kids and meeting my wife.
Right.
The only other best thing that I think ever happened to me was breaking down like 20 miles outside of Barstow and having to come back here as opposed to move to Arkansas.
Wait, the only reason why you didn't move was because you broke down out of Barstow?
Yeah, having to fix the breakdown, we ran out of money for the trip and only had enough to get back here to Northern California. We couldn't afford to get out to Arkansas. We literally could not afford the gas money to get out to Arkansas. We had just enough gas money to get back here. We got back here with like a quarter tank in each vehicle and no money. And I had to go beg for my job back because I had left. I had transferred from local Home Depot where I was working at the time, Orange Aproned it.
My God.
I transferred from that one to one out near in Oklahoma near the border of Arkansas. And so I was going to work there, and I had to go and call that Home Depot and say, I ain't moving out there. Go to my Home Depot and beg for a job back. Because
what a tragic turn of events.
You know what? That stop off for a night in Barstow had a couple of good things happen for me. One of the best of them being that we didn't move out to Arkansas. The other best of them I'll keep as a secret to myself for maybe a later date.
Okay.
But anyway, the point being, this here in Northern California, at least, is being focused more on your special needs students, your English second language, your students that are at the highest risk that need the most help. And that's great that they want to try to give them more support and more help. I'm not saying it's not a great thing to try to think of a way. But this plan, like you've said, just me talking to you about it, mm-hmm. there's so many possible flaws. There's so many issues.
Yeah.
There's so many things that make me say, gosh, I can see this blowing up in so many different fashions.
Yeah.
And then what's going to happen to the kids and the parents that decide they don't want to go? because, and they don't want their kids to go.
Right.
Because they're worried about these safety issues.
Right.
What happens when one of the kids says to their parents? The parents are like, all right, we'll give it a try. And the kid says to their parents, no, I'm not ready to start. I'm too scared.
Right. Like, what do you do? And I have a question.
I can say, here's what I can say. If your kid says to you, if you bring this up to your kid, if you're put in this position and your kid says to you, I'm too scared to go, here's what you do. You listen to your kid and you don't make them go, because what you do at that point is you give your kid the best chances of being an adult, because what you've shown them is you're somebody that they can trust with saying that they're scared, and you're going to help them with that fear. You're not going to force them into it.
Right.
That's what you do. You say, then if you're too scared, you don't have to go, because I'm not going to make you do something that scares you that much. If you feel your life is at risk and you're worried, I'm going to support you. I'm not going to belittle you. I'm not going to try to push you. I'm going to support you. That's what ends up making a healthy, mentally stable adult later in life. I'm just saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You said you had another question?
I did, but I completely lost my train of thought on that. That was a really good point to end on, actually.
I honestly think
that's one of the best. So the question that I did have is, what happens budget-wise? Like, if these kids voluntarily don't show, you have to count that they're part of the class anyway, right?
How do you, though? How do you count it the same? What's going to
happen? You just got to fucking give the school the money. First off, you don't, like, our schools are not paid enough anyway. And there's all this justification and bullshit treating it like it's a school. It's not a business. It's not bullshit that goes on. It's a school. It's the education system. You have to be able to provide education without prejudice and risk of recourse. It's education.
But that's how all of it works, man. That's how all of it works. That's why police departments get funded by the number of arrests that they get. All of it is funded in the wrong way.
I know. Absolutely. And it is a mistake to do that. I think, to be completely honest, we should honestly, every region, every school district, nationwide, this should not be the way that we fund schools. Because, I mean, Lord knows, like...
But here's the thing.
Look at how broken the medical system is, and at risk it is right now with a disease that's affecting the entire world, you know?
Another thing that has its problems with funding.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, Mike. We'll leave on this note, because otherwise we're going to go too far, and we're already far enough.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll leave on this note. There's only one way we can make these differences, and the way that we can make these differences, we need to get out and vote for the people who will make these differences.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Voting is what is necessary to do. Anyway, Mike.
Yes.
Normal spiel at the end. Where can people be listening to us?
You are probably listening to us at thezennialchronicles.com right now, or zenchron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. For shorthand, we do have our website available at both of those URLs. Speaking of Zenchron, you can also follow us on our socials. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We were talking about Instagram. We still haven't set that up yet. Our other socials.
My fault.
Our other socials, or our other podcast, you can find us on Spotify, Apple, TuneIn, Google, all those. Pretty much all those major places. We're looking to get out to more. We will be working that out as well. But... one of our main pages is actually our YouTube page, which has our entire archive of all of our podcasts to listen to, and we have plenty there. If you are listening to us on YouTube, please hit the like button on the video. Please hit the subscribe button as well, so that, you know, the next time we have a podcast, you get notified. Sorry, that's not true, because you have to hit the bell to do that.
Yes, hit the bell.
But make sure you subscribe and hit the bell. Yes, the bell will give you a notification the next podcast that we have coming up. And yeah, I believe
if you're on YouTube and you're listening, after you've clicked on those things, the like, the subscribe, the bell for the notification, please also check out Mike, if you like listening to him, check him out on Ruling Note Music. That's another page that he has on YouTube where he gives you a lot of musical facts, how to record crap, history of music stuff. And then he's got another page that he does with his wife.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily go to that page for him. I do it for his wife. She's much more fun to listen to.
She is.
Especially as she's berating him the entire time.
Oh, yes.
And this is a page where they, this is a page where they're playing through video games in chronological order.
Yeah.
Thus, it is called Chronosode Games.
Yes. That's exactly it.
Check both of those, like both of those, subscribe, click the bells, because, hey, what else are you doing right now other than figuring out when the hell your kid is going back to school? Anyway, thank you all for listening, and we will be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.